Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch,
On the Couch
with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle, and welcome to my couch. As always, I have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about being happy. Yeah, Pharrell knew what he was talking about when he was writing this song. What does it take to be happy? We're going to find out. Let me ask you something, guys. What makes you happy? Think about it. And I invite you to call in because I have a special guest today who's going to help answer questions. Or if you're shy, you don't want to get your voice on the air, you can email me. Yeah, right here at the station, Doc Michelle, D-O-C Michelle with two L's at AOL.com. And you'll find out more about what makes somebody happy. I mean, you might think it would be money. Power or fame, that's what most people say. If I could only have more money. Well, you got to think about this again, because many positive psychology experts say that some of the characteristics, behaviors, and thoughts of happy people have nothing to do with being wealthy, being a superstar. Come on, you guys. Most of those people are really messed up. You know that, right? No, it doesn't have to do with that. I mean, okay, I'll give you that. It helps to not have to worry about paying bills or having a place to live or a vehicle to take you places and a job. Yeah, come on, yeah. But how do you think you rate when it comes to feeling happy? Happy experts say it's important to put money low on the list. Because a lot of folks, like I said, who put money high on their priority are more at risk for depression and anxiety and low self-esteem. And I've seen a lot of wealthy people in my practice who are way worse off than folks who work hard for their money. No, it's true. And I've also found that people who strive for something significant, whether it's, gosh, I don't know, learning something new, a craft or raising kids or focusing on something that's significant to them, are a lot happier than those who don't have strong dreams, you know, or aspirations. And also I found that truly, you know, the old saying, stop and smell the roses. If we pause now and then to do that, or just be in the now and watch folks and feel it, smell the air out here, we're so lucky because, you know, if you live close to Los Angeles, West LA, you get the fragrant breezes from the ocean. You know, summertime, you get all the beautiful fragrances of the flowers and, you know, savoring the ordinary events that we normally hurry through. Or think back about pleasant moments. The people that do that and do that a lot build those neural net patterns and they feel better because they're used to it. And I also hear people say, it's really hard to find true friends. But sometimes, yeah, gotta put some effort in finding people who like to do the same things as you do. Reach out, volunteer. You know, put yourself out there. You can't wait for people to come to you. You know what I'm saying? Happier people tend to have good families and friends and supportive relationships. They have gratitude journals. These are many of the different characteristics of happy people today. But we're going to find out the real deal from an expert. The man, he's an expert. He knows what he's talking about. His name is J.V. Galindo. He's the professor of philosophy, humanities, and psychology at John F. Kennedy University and De Anza College. He's also the author of the popular creative thinking book journal, The Power of Thinking Differently, an imaginative guide to creativity, change, and the discovery of new ideas. That just gets me all pumped up just reading that. And today we're talking about his latest book, Authentic Happiness in 7 Emails, A Philosopher's Simple Guide to the Psychology of Joy, Satisfaction, and a Meaningful Life. And he's on the live line on the air right now with us. JV, nice to have you with me today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on your couch. This is fantastic. I love your enthusiasm, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. You know, we have a choice, don't we, JV? We sure do.
You, have
you know what? I really thought the way you presented your book was unique and perfect, especially for this time in the age of social media. You know, so I just love you to kind of roll out the ideas of how this got started. I understand the idea for the book all started when a lovely, brave man by the name of the K, is that how we pronounce it? Or Vic A?
It's like the initial VK.
VK, cool. Wrote different emails asking, how can I be happier? So can you sort of explain in more detail about these emails and what led to the creation of your book?
Sure. Well, just to backtrack a little bit, the book is a sort of a work of fiction in the sense that there really wasn't an individual named VK that sent a professor an email asking for help with being happier.
Yep.
The basis for the book was really I was working on a textbook for my graduate course on the psychology of happiness. And textbooks aren't so fun to write or to read.
Yeah, we always think we got to study.
So I decided halfway through the process, maybe I should approach this differently. I wrote the book on doing stuff differently. So maybe I should approach writing a happiness book differently.
Yeah.
And I thought more about my students and what type of reading they'd enjoy. And I thought maybe this type of premise, summarizing some of the key concepts in positive psychology in 7 emails, would be more conducive to their learning and their enjoyment. So that's kind of the impetus for the book.
What a cool idea. I really dig it. So,
but it makes it a lot more fun for me to write.
Well, yeah.
When you're thinking, it's just a conversation. You're just writing emails to somebody.
Yeah. It's fun reading, too. It's, you know, full of great explanations and a lot of stuff about how to help people really find happiness. What is happiness? Things like that. And we're going to find out today. And again, folks, I encourage you to call in if you have any questions for Professor Galindo. You can call him JV if you like. Right here at 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. If you have a situation or if you have just a general question about how to become more happy. Or you can email me as well if you don't want to, you know, put your voice on the air. It's docmichelle@aol.com. That's two L's in Michelle. So let's rock. Let's just get going here and lay it out so the listeners can find out more about how to get their life on the happy groove here. So in one of your 7 emails, you talk about the fact that you don't think people can be happier and they shouldn't focus on that, but instead that they can be happy. So what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, that's a really interesting distinction that I thought would be useful to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you listen to or read lots of texts on happiness, there's always this language where they talk about being happier, making yourself happier.
Yeah.
Well, I think that might lead to some issues. One of the first problems is that you start thinking of happiness primarily as some sort of emotion.
Mm.
Because emotions, we tend to think of them as having gradients. You can be sad or sadder, you can be angry or angrier, and you imagine that as having a spectrum. So lots of people think of happiness that way. They think of it as some sort of emotion that you could raise a level of or decrease the level of. But the problem with that is that happiness, at least based off psychological study, isn't just an emotion. It's not just a feeling that we have. There are other components to happiness, including a person's satisfaction with their life or what they're doing, with their sense of meaning or purpose. Mm-hmm. And if we just think of being happier, we tend to think of happiness as just an emotion and not having those two other parts. Mm-hmm. And maybe even the biggest issue with thinking of happiness as something you can have more of is the idea that, hey, if I'm trying to be happier, doesn't that imply that you're already happy? Yeah. Doesn't that imply that trying to be more of something?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So to a lot of people, then, they start to not be satisfied with their lives just because they believe they can have more of something, more of a certain feeling. And we get in this trap that psychologists refer to as a hedonic treadmill, where we keep going after more and greater and bigger and never really being satisfied with our lives.
Yeah.
So to me, I think our goal, or the easier goal, would be to approach happiness as a state of a life.
Yes.
So, for instance, in the book, I talk about cars and how we wouldn't really call one car more of a Toyota than another car. It's just a Toyota.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, right? Makes sense. Yeah.
Well, so why not do the same? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so why not do the same thing with our approach to happiness? Instead of thinking of it as something you can have more of or something that you can increase, it might be a healthier goal or healthier intention to just think of having a happy life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that will avoid the strife and suffering that comes in with trying to have a happier one.
Yes.
So that's kind of the distinction. That's the reason I make the distinction in the book. Now, that's not to say you can't have happiness more often.
Right.
In some sense, you know, we go through these ups and downs, and maybe what we really want is to experience a happy life more frequently or more consistently. So in that sense, you can say we want to be happier. You can always say you want to experience more joy, or maybe you are just talking about that feeling of ecstasy and you want to have more of that. So maybe you can think of happier in that way. You can use that term, but in terms of happiness in general, I think it's healthier to think, hey, I just want to be happy.
Yeah. I think, what do they say, over-analysis causes paralysis.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you bet.
So what was so cool also about your book is, you know, you being a professor and a specialist, you know, a philosopher, psychologist, humanity, an expert on the way we think and how we act in the world. I loved reading about those studies in your book, and we can talk about some of those, because that's what makes the real, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. It's what's going on in the studies. What are people showing us? And one in particular, you pointed out, you used a mathematical conclusion, which is H, which is, you say, our subjective happiness. Okay, folks, don't leave me on this one, okay? It's really simple. Okay? H equals S plus C plus V. Write it down, folks. So can you explain what this equation means? Because I really want to help listeners understand what makes up their happiness.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the study of happiness is a pretty recent psychological discipline. The field of positive psychology has really gained steam within the last 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So there weren't really lots of detailed studies on happiness.
Huh.
And a group of psychologists got together and looked at various studies that were around to try to see if they could determine, based off the study results, what went into making us happy.
Hmm.
What were the factors that contribute to our happiness? And after looking at the different studies, they noticed that our happiness is determined by partly our genetics. So the H of the S refers to our genetic set point.
Uh-huh.
So some of us are predisposed to certain emotional states, predisposed to certain levels of of enthusiasm and optimism just based off the genes we get from mom and dad.
Yeah, that's right. I have a lot of folks who have depressive disorder and bipolar disorder, and it's like, okay, who in your family had it? They're so genetically loaded, as we call them. You know, it's
right.
Like, oh, dang, does that mean I'm cursed here? But, okay, so S is the genetics that we have to share.
Yeah, there's that component. Obviously, there's this component C that's referred to as the conditions or the circumstances of our lives.
Okay.
And this is what most of us think of when we think of happiness, you know, changing where we live, changing our jobs, changing how much money we have, changing the clothes we wear, those sorts of conditions or circumstances. Thinking our happiness is dictated by what happens to us, the weather, somebody's smile, somebody's, you know, wrong finger directing our direction, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So that obviously is part of what makes up our long-term levels of happiness. But in addition to that, the last component, that B component, refers to voluntary activity.
Mm-hmm.
So that refers to not our circumstances or conditions, but what we do with them, how we react to them, the thoughts we choose to have, where we choose to place our attention. So those three components, the genetics, your circumstances, and your voluntary activity, seem to be what makes us happy.
Mm.
Now, the interesting result of their study was what percentage of each of those contributed to our happiness.
Right. What was that about?
Yeah. So when I usually show this to my students, I have them guess. Okay, tell me, what do you think? How much of our happiness is dependent upon our genetics? And I'll usually hear things like 20% or 10%.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out to be a pretty large number, actually. Between 40 to 50% of our long-term levels of happiness are based upon our genes.
Whoa.
That seems like a lot. And it is. It definitely is a lot. But it's the other 50% that I ask my students to focus on.
Uh-huh.
If that contributes to half our happiness, let's see what the other half is. Maybe we can do something about that.
Okay.
So I asked them, okay, so tell me, what do you think about the conditions of our lives? What percentage of our happiness is based upon the hands we're dealt? I mean, that's a good metaphor to use, right? The hand you were dealt in life. And they'll think of a large number, 70%, 60%, because when they grow up, this is kind of what they're taught. They're taught that happiness is about achieving this and getting that and meeting that expectation. It turns out that those conditions and circumstances of our lives only contribute to about 10% of our long-term
happiness. Whoa, that's shocking.
Yeah, it's very shocking to a lot of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we could talk about the reasons why. But the remainder then, the other 40%, is based upon our voluntary activity. So if we're going to stick to the hands you are dealt metaphor for being the conditions of our lives, then the voluntary activity is what we do with the hand, how we choose to deal with the circumstances we find ourselves in, where we choose to place our attention.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the genetics account for 50%, there's a huge chunk there that's just based upon how you live, how you choose to interact with the world.
Yeah, that's the whole deal about free will, isn't it?
Right.
You know? I mean, that's the deal.
So many people feel like that they have no control, that they have no say in their own happiness.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, exactly. JV, we have a caller on the line. Shall we take this? Shall we go for it? Hi, you're on the air with JV Galindo and Dr. Michelle. Who's this?
Hi, Doc. This is Kyle.
Hey, Kyle, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Good.
Hi, JV, how you doing?
Good. Thanks, Kyle, for calling in.
It's great to have
you. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Sure. Did you have a question about something for JV?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Can you tell me how to not focus on everything that's happening on the outside? I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I kind of get it, but my point is, how do you not react to everything that's so painful and hurtful and effective in around you? How do you just go in and say it's okay, you know?
Hmm. Good question.
Sure. I mean, that's maybe one of the most important questions you could ask.
Mm-hmm.
Is because we have the sense that the circumstances around us, whether they affect us or other people, right, we feel as if it has a direct impact upon our levels of happiness. And to an extent, they do. I mean, if you stub your toe, nobody's going to say, hey, you should be happy. You know, nobody's going to say, you change your mind. Don't think about the fact that you stubbed your toe. I mean, everyone accepts the idea that stubbing your toe hurts.
Yeah.
And it's an unpleasant sensation. It's an unpleasant feeling. What I talk about in the book is the idea that a lot of our suffering, a lot of our sense of negativity isn't the direct result of those unpleasant circumstances. It's often the result of our continuing to think about and judging and holding on to thoughts about the circumstances. So here we are stubbing our toe, and that hurts. Ouch. That's normal. Of course we feel pain. If we didn't feel pain, we'd be stubbing our toes everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
We wouldn't have any left. So the pain is good. And in fact, a part of the book, I talk about how being happy doesn't mean you don't feel negativity. Negativity can be thought of as a really important part of happiness. But I'll get back to that in a second. The idea, though, is you stub your toe and you feel the pain. So you feel the pain, but then sometimes we have a tendency to then judge it. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I'm an idiot for stubbing my toe there.
Yes.
What's wrong with that chair for being in front of me? Right? And it's those thoughts that's where we get caught up in unhappiness. That's, or another way to say it, that's how we fall out of happiness, is because we cling to those judgments. So, maybe the most important skill to learn, which I focus on in one of the emails, is the skill of learning how to place your attention where you want to place it. It's not about controlling your thoughts. You hit your toe on the chair, it's going to hurt, and you're going to tell yourself it hurts. But then, using the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain where you can direct your attention, it's learning how to use that and exercise that as a muscle to gain the skill to go, oh, wait a minute, I just stubbed my toe, and instead of fixating on this, I'm going to shift my mind to something else, like how I could get out of this situation, or how I could do something positive to make sure somebody else doesn't stub their toe, or how I can fixate on thoughts that would be more empowering to me in general. So it's really about willpower and controlling our focus and attention, and that's a skill that takes practice. That's a skill that takes time, but it's a skill that we all can learn. It's part of our biology to do that.
Mm-hmm. And yes. Kyle, I really encourage you to, you know, check out JV's book. It's really amazing. It's called Authentic Happiness in 7 Emails, A Philosopher's Simple Guide to the Psychology of Joy, Satisfaction, and Meaningful Life. And I'm going to be telling everybody how they can get a hold of JV's book at the end of the show as well. So that was a great question. Thank you, Kyle, so much for calling in.
Question. And if I could piggyback on Kyle's question. Oops, sorry, Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was going to say thank you so much, JD. I mean, I've never really thought of it quite like that. It's, you know, you're constantly responding to everything that's happening to you, you know, and we're not taught when we're growing up to not, you know, to like not think about not stubbing your toe for long after it happens. And it really is easy to judge and ask, how did I get here? How did it go wrong?
Yeah.
Where did it start? And
yeah.
I guess, JD, you're right. I'm really going to, something that really touched me just now was when you said, it's like a muscle, being able to control your thoughts, direct your thoughts, because I feel like that might be the number one reason, you know, is not knowing that you can direct your thoughts, not knowing that you can control them after you've already made an assumption or a judgment.
Yeah, that's so true.
Kyle,
thank you
so
much. Well, we appreciate you calling in, and
thank you, Kyle.
It's nice to have you here on the couch.
Thank you so much, Doc. You're my favorite.
Oh,
I
thanks.
Love you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you, JD. Have a great day.
All right, thanks for calling in, Kyle. Bye bye now. Hey, that's the kind of thing that makes me happy. Cool guy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to know that you're contributing positively in the world.
Oh, yeah. That is.
But there's a couple things that Tom brought up that I would love to talk about.
I would love to hear it.
So the first is this whole idea of you know, trying to deal with negative feelings or negative experiences.
Yeah.
A lot of books or a lot of self-help experts will talk about, you know, sticking with the positive and, you know, trying to focus on the positive as being the only approach to happiness. And what we often neglect is the fact that, you know, since happiness is more than just a feeling, negative emotions, what we call negative emotions, are part of a happy life.
Yeah.
And to some extent, if you don't feel negatively, if you don't feel sad at times or bad at times, that can be an indication that you're not living life as meaningfully as you could.
Mm-hmm.
It might be an indication that you're not taking the sorts of risks to do things that really are important to you. If there's something that's important to you, of course you're going to feel stressed about it. Of course you're going to feel like it's dangerous because it's crucial to you. It's something you really care about.
Yes.
So in that sense, I don't want people to misconstrue whatever I say as saying be away, stray away from negativity. No, negativity is part of living a meaningful life. Mm-hmm. If you were afraid and if you always strayed away from anything that would possibly give you that could possibly bite you in the end, then guys would never ask girls out.
Right?
Yeah. Then you'd never root for a sports team because chances are you're going to lose at the end.
Yeah.
So true. Yeah, that's really important to remember. And the second thing they brought up is this whole idea of how he didn't know or didn't sense or didn't feel while he was growing up that we have control of those thoughts, right? That we could pay attention to what we want to pay attention to.
I don't think we're taught that a lot of times, huh?
No. Well, it's not. We think we're in control. We think we choose things in our lives. But as it turns out, a lot of what we do, a lot of our behaviors and our thoughts aren't really there because we chose them, but they're there because we're kind of programmed to have them.
Yeah.
And this is why I focus on the idea of happiness being a choice, because you can choose where you direct your attention. You can choose the types of behaviors you have in the world. But we often don't use that choice. We just often do things out of habit, do things out of reaction, do things out of conditioning, and those things aren't necessarily the behaviors that lead to happiness.
Mm-hmm. So, that makes sense. It sure does. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio here, and my special guest today, amazing. He's J.V. Galindo. He's a professor of philosophy, humanities, and psychology at John F. Kennedy University and De Anza College. And also, he's the author of many books, but we're talking about his latest today. It's called Authentic Happiness in 7 Emails. Comfortable read, really gives a philosophical and psychological point of view about what makes us happy. Pick it up, guys. It'll just make you feel better reading it and give you some great ideas, you know, about how to feel a little better, how to make your life, how to make those choices, you know. So I want to get to some of these really cool points that you talk about. I loved your idea, by the way, about the you call it the hedonic treadmill, right? We're like the little rats in the maze. We always want. Well, there's a different way of thinking. You talk about the book called Born to Run by Christopher McDougall and how you use those words that he talks about: thinking easy, thinking light, smooth, and fast. So, why are those ideas really important in helping us slow down a little bit and be happier?
Well, I don't know how much you run, Dr. Mitchell. Do you run much?
I used to be a runner.
Kind
of knees are a little bad because I used to run a lot. But I am a power walker. So I do hills. I go up hills. I get that heart rate up on the hills. So,
So Christopher McDougall was a journalist, or is a journalist, and he wanted to learn more about this mysterious runner that lived in the Copper Mountains in Mexico. Now, the runner wasn't Mexican. The runner was from here, was from America, and he was kind of known out in the Copper Mountains because here's this Caucasian guy, and all he does is run through the hills. Doesn't seem to have a job, seems to have no income, lives off whatever he gets off the land, and just runs. And he would run for long periods of time. So McDougall is interested in learning more about this character, and he tries to hunt him out, tries to find him.
Yeah.
And the first part of the book goes through that, and he finally meets him, and obviously they go for a run, because that's what the guy does. And the person's name that he was looking for is Caballo Blanco, at least that's the mythical name.
Yeah.
And Caballo Blanco, as they're running, notices Christopher's running form and says to Christopher those four ideas. He says to him, think easy, light, smooth, and fast. You start with easy, because if that's all you get, that's not so bad. Then work on light, make it effortless, like you don't care how high the hill is or how far you got to go. And when you practice that so long that you forget you're practicing, you work on making it smooth. And then you won't have to worry about the last one, because if you do the first three, you'll be pretty fast.
Yeah.
And really, yeah, what that is it's just a really simple way of thinking about a person's running form. It's a really simple approach to think about how to run better. And for a lot of runners, there's so much information out there on how to run. There's so many studies, so many instructors, so many coaches telling you, no, you got to do this, and you got to do that, and you got to do this. And here is this guy who says, just think these four concepts.
Uh-huh.
To make it, it simplifies all the minutia about running into just four simple ideas that you can easily keep to yourself as like a checklist or easy use as a motto. So as I was trying to write my original textbook, I was reading Born to Run, and I said to myself, wow, those concepts fit really well with how I think about the psychology of happiness. And so I decided it would be great to kind of use that motto and explain or summarize all the key ideas of the psychology of happiness in pretty much those four terms.
Yeah.
So think easy refers to how oftentimes we are our worst enemy when it comes to dealing with negativity.
Yeah.
It's our thoughts that make us unhappy. It's our judgments that make us unhappy. It's our worries about the past that make us unhappy. So to be easy on yourself. The second idea, to be light. I take it a little differently than running lightly. I take it in terms of light, like physical light, and how sometimes we are so focused on our day-to-day activities that we don't see the joy and inherent lightness that's in the world. So to look for that, to pay attention to that, to focus on that. The third, which is smooth, refers to how we can remind ourselves that life doesn't have to be so strenuous and life doesn't have to be so mundane. Smooth refers to how sometimes we get caught up in activities and it seems like time just flies. We get caught up in activities and we feel like we're part of the activity, or we feel like things are flowing through us and we get caught up in it. And we wouldn't really call it pleasurable. Maybe we wouldn't call it joyful, but we would say we're satisfied, we're gratified with the activity.
Right.
So that's what smooth refers to. And then the last, instead of saying fast, because we're talking about happiness, I refer to meaning and how to remind ourselves, at least for me, to remind myself, to approach life meaningfully, to approach it so that I feel a sense of purpose. So all of positive psychology, all of the psychology of happiness, I summarize in those three concepts just because I don't want to get so distracted trying to weed through all the other stuff that you can easily get lost in.
Yes, we sure can. No, exactly. And we do have a hard break coming up here with the CBS News folks, but I really wanted to, you know, talk to you more about, this is called a tease, folks, a flow states, how to get into the flow states, how to live meaningfully, how to, you know, really enjoy life, like you were just talking about, in the now, so we don't become addicted to pleasure. I mean, pleasure's right. great, but, you know, there, it's that whole running on the treadmill thing, too, that you talk about in your book. And let's just give listeners, if you can, the best way to find out more about you, JV, and to pick up your book, Authentic Happiness in 7 Emails.
Sure. One way is just to go straight to my website at jvgalindo.com, mm-hmm. JVYGALINDO.com, or just go to Amazon and do a search for Authentic Happiness in 7 Emails.
And it's there. That's right. And folks can contact you and get more information and, again, pick up the book. What a great read. What a wonderful way to roll it out and really, you know, especially in this day and age of social media, to really help people understand the philosophic, because you are a philosopher, professor, and psychological aspects of what makes up happiness. Helped me a lot. And I'm going to use it as a tool with clients as well. So thank you. Thank you. All right. Take good care. All my best to you, and we'll keep in touch.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, JV. Thanks for calling in. Okay, folks, again, you can pick up the book. I'll have it up in the archives. You know I always have information about how to replay the show. It'll be available for download and replaying tomorrow with all the information. So don't forget that. Thanks, guys, for being on the couch. Really appreciate it. Thanks also. Sorry about the folks who are on hold with the calls. Please email me your questions and I will answer them. All right? Or I will refer you over to JV so he can help you out. All right? And you can email me at docmichelle@AOL.com. Thanks so much for being on the couch again. Remember, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. That's the way it works in the world. Talk to you next Friday. More help on how to be happy. Bye-bye. Just